Hello, folks. Welcome back to Hoops HD's preview video cast and podcast coverage of college basketball as we get set for our final preview of the day. We take on the SEC. I'm Galen Clavio. Joining me as always, or at least for today as always, Hank Glassner. Hank, wave, say hi to the people.
Hello, public.
There it is.
I can't wave.
David Griggs, wave your fin or shake your tail feather or something like that. There we go. All right. David Griggs also joining us. So let's tackle the SEC here, guys. And, you know, the SEC,
basketball frenzy.
Right now,
there's one thing on everyone's mind.
Everything on hold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's on hold in SEC country because they're so excited about basketball. Not really. I mean, they are in Kentucky, but that's Kentucky. The rest of the SEC, not so much. Now, Kentucky, we should probably start and talk with them. This is a team that missed the NCAA tournament last year and lost in spectacular fashion to Robert Morris on the road in the first round of the tournament. I think that's something that needs to be celebrated a bit more than it has been, but that's okay. We'll just we'll kind of move on from that because they do have a considerable amount of talent on their roster coming into this season, and most of it is brand new talent, like talent we have not seen in college basketball so far. Kentucky was 21-12 and 12-6 in the conference last year, which probably should illustrate how poor this conference is. Top to bottom in terms of the overall talent that's available, that Kentucky, even in a down year, was six games above 500. Now, they lost some players, obviously, but they gained a tremendous amount of talent. The big name, the big ticket item coming in is Julius Randle, 6'8 forward, top two or top three. Some places have ranked him as the best high school recruit. Some have Andrew Wiggins in that slot. Regardless, Julius Randle, very good player. They've also got Andrew Harrison, one of the Harrison twins. He comes in as a top 10 recruit. You got James Young, who is the top 10 recruit everybody's forgotten about. You've got Aaron Harrison, who's kind of like the Bobby Ewing of the Harrison twins. Good, but not as good as his brother, theoretically. Who knows how that will actually play out in the college scene. And then you've even got guys off the bench. I mean, you've got Dakari Johnson. He'll come in and play, probably not as a starter, but he'll come in as a reserve to Willie Cauley-Stein. You've still got him on the roster. You've got Derek Willis that's coming in. So much young talent. We know Calipari's been able to do a lot with talent that's this young in the past. He won a national title with a mix of younger players and older players a couple of years ago. David, let me start with you on this. Obviously, everybody jumped on the Kentucky bandwagon early last year, and then most of them broke legs trying to jump off of it after the early going. Yeah. I mean, this is a team that went from being ranked either second or third in the country to not making the NCAA tournament. Obviously, I think everybody sees them as being better this year. How much better will they be? Are we talking national championship level or something below that?
I really don't know, and that's the thing. Like, when you have all this talent that they appear to have, it's you've never really seen it play on a Division I level. I mean, it's been scouted and all that, but sometimes it's easy to greatly misdiagnose how good or how bad a team is when they have so much new players, even if those new players are as talented as the ones at Kentucky appear to be. So I just don't know. I mean, you know, they started off, I believe, ranked third last year and missed the NCAA tournament and then went out in the first round of the NIT. I don't know if any team has ever missed the tournament, lost the first NIT game, and then started the next season number one or not. I don't think it's happened, but maybe it has. So it's just really hard to say. I mean, Kentucky is deserving of their expectations and I guess their ranking and what people think they might do. But after last year and after a lot of highly ranked teams that we've seen based purely off of speculation of potential, I'm not ready to subscribe to the fact that they're a Final Four team or even a Sweet 16 team until I see them do something.
Yeah, similar to our corollaries with Oklahoma State on our earlier podcast and a couple of other teams, Baylor, I almost feel like I'm back in a show-me mode with this Kentucky team. You know, I mean, I feel like, Hank, there's been a lot of revisionist history as far as how Kentucky won their title a couple of years ago, and this idea that Calipari brought in a bunch of freshmen and they parlayed, you know, excellent play by those freshmen into a dominant national championship run. They weren't quite as dominant in at least three of the games that they played in the NCAA tournament that year as people seem to remember. And B, that was not all freshmen on that team. I mean, you had Terrence Jones playing a big role. You had Deron Lamb playing a big role. You had Darius Miller playing not a huge role, but at least a decent one. And, yeah, it was guys like, Marcus Teague and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Anthony Davis that were kind of the ones leading the charge, but they won the tournament in large part because they had the depth from players that have been around a little bit. Now, you sort of have that scenario again this year, but what those players had done up to that point had been much better than what the players that Kentucky had last year were able to do in their first year on the job. So, I don't know, what are your thoughts on this situation with the Wildcats?
The vibe that I'm getting from this year's Wildcats team, taking into account the talent that they have with the inexperience combined with the experience, kind of reminds me of the John Wall to Marcus Cousins era, Eric Bledsoe, and so forth, of talent that they had a few years back at Kentucky, just because you weren't really talking about how good they were as a team. You were talking about how good these guys were going to be in the NBA. And that's what you got with this team. You have Julius Randle, Alex Poitras, the Harrison twins, Willie Cauley-Stein, Dakari Johnson, Marcus Lee. And everybody's talking more about their talents individually as opposed to how they're going to mesh together and become a good college basketball team. Will they become a good college basketball team? Yes, I do think so. And I think anybody who doesn't think so is probably not thinking straight. But the question is, can they each sacrifice enough to the point where they can become the clear-cut national champion favorite? I have to see that. Also, I think Willie Cauley-Stein is the key to this team. How much of a leap does he make from last year to this year? Because he showed so much signs of potential. And now that he's the main big man there, will he become the interior force that Calipari wants him to become?
Schedule-wise, this team is interesting because they have an odd smattering of decent teams mixed in with the detritus that makes up the bulk of their schedule. They play Michigan State in Chicago on the 12th of November. That's going to be an outstanding game. That whole day is going to be outstanding because both games feature some really top-level teams.
I'm going to be sick.
You're going to be sick?
That day.
No, that day you're going to be sick.
I'm not going to be able to go to work.
you have to.
That's the thing. At work, I can just watch the games anyway. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, just take it with you. Yeah. They play Providence on a neutral floor. They play Baylor on a neutral floor. They're at North Carolina. I'm kind of interested to see how that game goes. They have Boise State at home on the 10th of December, which is an interesting choice for both of those. Belmont, they play at home on the 21st. And then they have their regular tilt against Louisville on the 28th. And then they start the SEC schedule. And, you know, really, it's like I almost feel like outside of the games versus Florida and maybe Missouri, maybe Tennessee, I don't know that we learn that much about this Kentucky team. And more to the point, I don't know how much they learn about themselves in the SEC itself. I just do not think it's that strong of a conference.
You're really out on a limb there.
I know.
Wow.
But I do think that Kentucky, they've obviously got a tremendous assemblage of talent, and I think that they're obviously going to be in a position where if they can run through some of those early games, they're going to be in ranked number one heading into conference play, and I don't see them really relinquishing that for any period of time once they get there. So I think that they could almost secure themselves a number one seed provided they just take care of business in the non-conference portion of the schedule. I don't think the SEC is going to help or hurt their cause tremendously because I just don't see most of their foes being able to keep up with them.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a very good out-of-conference schedule. Now, there's one team, and we all know who it is, that is conspicuously absent from that schedule that needs to be on there, and that's Indiana. But that's ridiculous. That's another podcast. But Well, it is ridiculous.
I mean, you know, it's funny because all of the talk about Kentucky needing to play on neutral courts as supposedly being the reason why they canceled the series. They're still playing Louisville in a home and home. They're still playing North Carolina in a home and home. They brought Boise State in. They are playing neutral court games against
Belmont's
Michigan
State. Belmont's
a good game. Yeah, Belmont's a good game. I mean, well, I think there's blame on both sides with that series, and I think, frankly, it's beneficial to both coaches to not play each other. Because, like, this year,
it's not beneficial to me.
Well, we understand
that. Play that.
But I think this year Kentucky would have beaten the crap out of Indiana, just like I think last year Indiana would have beaten the crap out of Kentucky. So it's for both of those coaches and the ego trips they tend to be on, losing to your cross-river rival is a bit more than I think either of them can bear. So it's not a great situation, but it is what it is. So anyway, let's move off Kentucky and talk about the rest of the conference. Florida, ranked 8th nationally, and has been, if there's been anybody that's chosen against Kentucky to win the SEC, they've tended to choose Florida. This is a curious team, this Florida squad. You know, last year, a lot of people were watching the way this team was playing, and they said to themselves, hey, this is a team that could really cause a lot of problems in the NCAA tournament. You know, they go in to the final month of the season. They were 18-4. They had kind of swept through the conference portion of their schedule up to that point with only one stumble. And then they struggled down the stretch. They lost badly at Georgia. They lost badly at Vanderbilt. They lost really badly at home to Kentucky in the final game of the year. And then they lost to them again in the SEC tournament. They put it together somewhat in the NCAA tournament, and they came close to beating Louisville. They only lost by 4. But it was an odd season for Florida. A season that started slow. Got real
that
fast
was two
in the middle.
Years ago, the Louisville. Who did they lose to?
I'm sorry. I apologize completely on all of that because I was looking at the wrong set. No, they lost to Michigan last year, but they lost that game badly by 20.
Yes.
And they did lose to Kentucky, but it was on the road and not at home. So just ignore everything I just said. Point being, though, for a team that people were looking at and saying, yeah, you know, this Florida team could really cause a lot of issues. They end up as I think a 3 seed. In the East, they lose by 20 to Michigan, and even during the SEC, after starting off 8-0, you know, they lost 4 road games, and you know, you could make an argument that Missouri was the only one they really should have lost in that, losing to Arkansas and Tennessee and Kentucky, and then losing to Mississippi in the Marshall Henderson game. Yeah. Questionable for a team with the statistical credentials that Florida had. So they come into this year. Kenny Boynton's gone. Mike Rosario's gone. Scotty Wilbekin is, I believe, suspended or injured, one of the two, coming into the season. So they have to integrate some new pieces, and they've got some good pieces on the team already, but they bring in Eli Carter, who was a transfer from Rutgers out of the Mike Rice fiasco. They bring in Dorian Finney-Smith, who was at Virginia Tech and was a really top-level player there, or at least was looked at as a top-level recruit. He didn't really perform as well as one might think. And then Casey Hill is going to be Wilbekin's replacement while he's on suspension. This is a team that's got a lot of talent, like most of these Billy Donovan teams have had. But David, you just get the sense that they're not going to be as high-flying as they were last year.
Yeah, and the thing about Florida, they have a propensity for getting to the Elite Eight, getting a huge lead in the Elite Eight, and then blowing it. So again, but yeah, I mean, even though that they had a good year 2 years ago, but I mean, they had a better tournament run. I don't think that was entirely indicative of what their season was like. Last year, even though they had a good run in the NCAA tournament, I still felt like throughout the year they came up a little bit short. And, you know, considering I'm just not as big on Florida as everybody else seems to be because of, first of all, I guess the games that they lost last year that they really should have won, particularly late in the year. And then secondly, they lost a lot of what made them as good as they were coming into this year. So I'm just kind of sitting back and watching. I'm not completely – I mean, they probably will get it together. They normally do. Billy Donovan does a great job. But I'm not really to put a rubber stamp on them winning the SEC or being in the Final Four or being eighth in the nation. I think that's a little bit premature.
Hank, your microphone's not working.
Go
ahead.
I'm higher on Florida this year than in years past, and there's one main reason, and it's called addition by subtraction. Kenny Boynton, for them in the few years that he was there, was just down the stretch in games. He A, refused to give the ball up, and B, didn't take good shots. And whenever they had close games, for some reason, even when Billy Donovan wouldn't call his number, Boynton would take a 23-footer for no reason whatsoever. I think they're better this year without him. But the key is, will their backcourt mesh well with Wilbekin being suspended, with Eli Young, who is a good player. I've seen him play on Mike Rice's Rutgers teams, or former head coach Mike Rice now. And, yeah. And is Casey Hill going to become the player, the McDonald's All-American, that he can become for Florida? I think the main key is Patrick Young, though. Just like with Kentucky and Willie Cauley-Stein, who's going to have to shoulder a lot more in terms of experience, Patrick Young has been there forever, but I haven't seen marginal improvement made from year one to – he's a senior now, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, from year one to year whatever he's in. And it's just been the past two seasons, 10.6 rebounds, no improvement whatsoever. He's going to need to become a better player, especially offensively. He's going to have to develop a better back-to-the-basket game if they want to become a national title contender, which I think they can become.
Well, I think Florida, you know, from the standpoint of – I don't think they're eighth best in the country. I really don't. I think that they'll be good. I think they're a Sweet 16-level team just from the talent they have and from the coaching input that they're going to be getting. But as far as really challenging Kentucky, I don't think that this is their year for it. But, you know, I also thought last year they might not be quite as good as they were, and they looked really good for at least the first half of the season. I think they kind of ran out of steam at the end. But, again, it's one of those situations where – you have a finite number of good teams in the SEC, and it becomes a matter if you're a team like Florida of just taking care of business night in and night out. And I think they'll be able to do that, but I also I question a little bit with the influx of new players in there. You know what exactly that process will look like. I also think that their non-conference schedule is really interesting this year. They have to travel to Wisconsin. And that's never an easy place to play. Although it is going to be curious watching Wisconsin have an early game against an athletic team under these new rules of that the NCAA is trying to enforce with hand checking and body checking and so forth.
If you find free throw shooting interesting, then yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's interesting because that's Wisconsin's entire game is being physical and not letting the opponent get comfortable. And, you know, I think, and maybe I'm getting this quote wrong, but I believe Bo Ryan said in one of the preseason scrimmages that they had where they had real officials coming in and calling the game, both sides of Wisconsin's team were in the bonus at the 17-minute mark of the first half.
Excellent. Yes.
So, I mean, Wisconsin might just be in a position where they have no players left at about, you know, the 10-minute mark of the second half because they're all fouled out. That's what I think is interesting. Are they going to be able to adapt at all to compete against teams that they can't just bludgeon to death with possession? But Florida's also got Florida State at home, they travel to UConn, they've got Kansas at home, they've got Memphis on a neutral floor. I mean, they have a really kick-ass non-conference schedule. They also have Richmond in that mix.
Yeah.
They got Middle Tennessee State in that mix. So Fresno State comes to town.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. They're not just playing the North Floridas and Southerns of the world, although they are playing those teams this year. So I'm curious to see what happens with them. I'm also curious to see what happens with the Missouri Tigers. Now, we're going to get to Tennessee in a second. I know that's where normally people go on this. But Missouri, you know, this is an odd team. You know, Frank Haith takes over, takes him to the second round of the NCAA, or excuse me, second seed in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago, and they end up losing in the first round to Norfolk State. Then last year, they struggled more than they probably should have. They beat VCU on a neutral floor down in Atlantis. They beat Illinois handily on a neutral floor, but they had some baffling losses in conference, including losing to LSU and Texas A&M on the road. They end up losing by 12 to Colorado State in the 8-9 game. And, you know, they lost some players off of that team, obviously. I mean, Keon Bell's gone. Lawrence Bowers is gone. Alex Oriaki is gone. They do integrate some new pieces, and one of them is Jordan Clarkson, who transfers in from Tulsa. But the Frank Haith experiment, I don't know. I think the jury's still very much out on this, David. And, you know, particularly now that Haith has a 5-game suspension that he has to serve at the beginning of SEC play. Granted, I think
it's the beginning of the year.
Oh, is it the beginning? Okay, so it's the beginning of the year, and those 5 games are Southeast Louisiana, SIU, Hawaii, I think
IUPUI and Gardner-Webb
and IUPUI. We're not talking about a murderer's row here. But I don't know. I look at the trends here with Missouri, and I would be quite concerned if I was the Missouri faithful at this stage.
I am not impressed. I was 2 years ago. I thought he did a much better job than what I expected, and then they lost to, I think it was Norfolk State, and things seemed to be back to normal. Last year, they had high expectations. They should have been better than what they were, and they weren't. Went out early in the tournament. I would not be surprised. Like, the majority of their out-of-conference schedule, minus Illinois, is pretty weak. So they're not... I believe it is. I mean, are there any like standout games on that schedule?
They've got Northwestern on a neutral floor.
That's not a tournament win.
They've got UCLA at home on the 7th. They've got Illinois on a neutral floor in St. Louis, and then they're at North Carolina State. So they've got granted, I think of any of those, only UCLA is a team I would put money on right now to make the NCAA tournament.
Right. And this is a team that is awful away from home. They were last year. I don't think that's going to change this year. And I just don't think they're going to get the statement wins they need to make the tournament. I really don't. I believe in Frank Haith that little.
I think that's – I can't argue with your commentary on that. Hank, I mean, is there something that we're overlooking with this Missouri squad that we should be focusing on?
No.
No. Okay.
There's Frank Haith, who at the beginning of the year, or at the beginning of his tenure, you thought, oh, wow, coach of the year, going to do great things at Missouri. But now you're left with more questions than answers about his tenure.
For the record, having been at the University of Miami when Frank Haith was there, I did not look upon that as being a particularly great hire. I really question what Missouri was trying to do. I know they were trying to get Matt Painter, but they should have known they weren't going to get Matt Painter, and I think that was a bad consolation prize. And yeah, I think we've seen this song and dance before. It's kind of like it's the Bruce Weber effect to a certain degree. You know, you hire a guy and he looks like a good choice, and you know, Weber looked like a good choice coming out of Southern Illinois, and he had a couple of good years at the beginning when he still had Bill Self's players, and then it was kind of all downhill from there. And he was able to keep just enough wins on the resume year in and year out that Illinois didn't want to fire him. I wonder, particularly with the findings of the NCAA investigation, whether Frank Haith will have that long of a leash at Missouri.
They wanted to hire Matt Painter, who would have been a good hire, and then their second choice ended up being Frank Haith. Who was their third choice? Me?
Yeah,
With that drastic of a decline, who would they have gotten if Frank Haith said no? And he was so unimpressive at Miami, and I found it humorous. I don't remember the exact specifics, but there was a buyout clause that Miami was owed, and they waived it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting situation, and I think that it's funny. You look at what Larrañaga's done. He accomplished more last year than Haith did his entire time at Miami. And so, and you can, you know, the thing is, you could get away with that at Miami to a certain degree because no one really cares about basketball there
or football if you're watching the game right now.
Well, a lot of people care. They just don't live in Miami about football. But you can't really get away with that at Missouri because Missouri is a basketball school. I mean, they've had a good football team this year, and maybe that takes some of the heat off the fact that they're competing as well as they are in the SEC. But it's a basketball school at the end of the day, and I think it's going to be a problem for them.
They're not playing Kansas.
They're not playing Kansas. That's right. Let's switch gears and talk about Tennessee. This was not a team that scored a lot of points last year, but they still, you know, were somewhat effective at various times throughout the course of the season. You know, they ended up, you know, I think they missed out on the NCAA tournament, but they, you know, they put themselves in a position over the course of time that they were in position to at least get there. They finished 11-7 in conference. They had a couple of nice wins early on in the season. They beat Wichita State. They beat Xavier. They just a couple too many bad losses, I think, down the stretch for them, including that road loss at Georgia. I think that was probably the deciding factor for them not making it.
Yeah.
So this year they come into the season, and you know, from a schedule perspective, they've got some interesting games. They have to travel to Xavier on the 12th in their first real game of the year, and then they have nobody until they travel to Wichita State. They have NC State at home. They have Virginia at home, which is kind of an odd game for them to have scheduled.
Interesting game.
And then they hit the SEC. So they really don't have a whole lot of chances to prove themselves in the non-conference. So, you know, this is a similar prescription to last year for Tennessee. If they win at least two of those games that I just mentioned out of those four that they've got in the non-conference, and they finish above 500 without any really bad losses in the SEC, they're probably in pretty good shape to win the tournament. The question is, are they actually going to be able to do that? And that's something, Hank, that I think the jury's out. You know, as decent as their offense looked last year, this was not a very good defensive team for Tennessee.
Not a good defensive team, but they do have veteran leadership in Jordan McRae, Jarnell Stokes, and Jerome Maimon, who will all provide them with some sort of nucleus, alongside Memphis transfer Antonio Barton, who will provide a scoring punch to Tennessee as well. However, they do have a massive hole at the point guard position because Trey Golden was kicked out of the program. So they do have a starting five that will end up taking them to the tournament, but they have no depth whatsoever. And my question becomes, on both sides of the floor, are they going to match up physically and mentally on both sides of the floor? Are they going to be able to score enough? And are they? I have questions on both sides of the ball when you talk about Tennessee, just because they don't have depth.
Right.
Yeah. That's going to hurt them. I really like this Tennessee team, at least their starting five. I mean, Jordan McRae is a good player. I think their front court will be solid, at least the starting front court, but depth is going to be an issue for them. Now, fortunately, the SEC is not very good, and they should be able to win the majority of the games, not because of how good they are, but because of how weak their opponents are. I think they're going to get into the tournament, but the depth is an issue.
I think at some point there's a bit of a law of diminishing returns with these SEC teams, because, you know, I think the four teams we've mentioned, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, and Missouri, these are all teams that at this point I'm expecting to see in the tournament at the end of the year. But even with that, though, I think that both Missouri and Tennessee are somewhat borderline if things don't go their way early on. You get beyond those teams, though, you're not talking about a lot of really impressive squads. I mean, you've got Alabama, but Alabama, they've yet to really do a lot that would make you think that they have a chance at winning consistently enough to get into the tournament. You know, look at last year.
I think their ceiling is the bubble. They could get in, but that's their ceiling.
I mean, last year they had home losses to Dayton, Mercer, and Tulane, and that killed their NCAA tournament chances, even though they went 12-6 in the SEC. You've got a team like LSU, who was like the definition of mediocre last year. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they were able to, they beat Missouri at home, they finished 9-9 in the conference, but then they lost to South Carolina, and they lost to Georgia, and they lost to Auburn. I mean, these are just bad situations all around. Vanderbilt, they came into last year with a lot of people looking at them, and I think they were in the top 10 in some people's preseason polls, and that's something that people have forgotten. That was almost worse than the Kentucky at number three thing. And, you know, Vanderbilt goes into the season, they lose to Oregon, Davidson, Marist, Villanova, Middle Tennessee State, and Butler, all before the SEC schedule starts. They end up finishing 8-10 in conference with some pretty poor losses in the midst of that.
And it's a testament to how weak the league was that they won eight I mean, really. Yeah,
exactly. and see, this is my entire point, is that you get these teams, and unless they really make a lot of hay in the non-conference portion of the schedule, there's nothing in the league that's going to prop them up enough to actually get them into the tournament. You know, Hank, a team that's kind of floating on the periphery in this is Arkansas, and I don't know if Hank, if you're looking at this team, they've got some decent pieces, and they've got, I think, their first McDonald's All-American in the last 20 years coming in Bobby Portis, and then another really good recruit in Moses Kingley. They may be poised to actually make some noise, because this was a better Arkansas team than a lot of people remember or gave credit for last year.
Yeah, but I don't know. I still think they're at least a couple years away from being on the level that Mike Anderson was supposed to get them at. I just don't see it, because they're so wildly inconsistent with both their roster flux with players leaving the program and transferring, and with recruiting in general. And it seems like Mike Anderson's finally recruiting in-state talent and McDonald's All-Americans to his team. That said, I have two thoughts about two other teams so that I could wrap up my SEC thoughts. And that's, number one, I don't care who's coaching at Alabama. That is a tough situation to coach in, not only with the football program dedicating so much of the athletic department's resources, but it's just really hard to recruit basketball talent to that school. And I really feel for Anthony Grant, because he, in my opinion, is one of the better coaches in the nation. If he was at any other school, I think people would be talking about him much more, but he's just gotten so unlucky with player injuries and with players not ending up having the right attitudes and getting kicked out of the program. I just feel for him, because he should be in a better position than where he is, and I hope that he is soon enough. And also, one more year and Johnny Jones will have that LSU team back to the top of the SEC. He's an elite recruiter. They already received, last week they got a commit from a top 10 recruit, I think, in a couple of years. That team is going to be very talented. Johnny Jones is going to do things in Louisiana.
Yeah, I never liked him at North Texas.
Well, here's the thing with both Alabama and LSU. I don't think it's as hard to be successful at those schools as a lot of these coaches have made it seem. I mean, we've seen Alabama have success in the tournament in past years. We've seen LSU get to a Final Four within the last decade. And, you know, with Anthony Grant, I think Grant, he obviously, you know, was an excellent coach. And he was a guy that people had tabbed as being Billy Donovan's successor at Florida, should he ever leave. You know, I think all of those things are true, but it shouldn't be that hard in as weak of a conference as the SEC is to put together a team that's at least capable of getting a double-digit seed in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, that's my biggest thing with a lot of these SEC teams is that, and it's not just those two. I mean, I think South Carolina falls into this category. I think Georgia under Mark Fox, I mean, Fox came in as a pretty hot commodity in coaching, and he has done nothing at Georgia. I mean, it really has been an underachieving group of players, underachieving program. There's no reason with the amount of basketball talent that you see in the South that you shouldn't see a better conference top to bottom than the SEC has been. And the fact that Florida and Kentucky have been successful, I think, is a testament to those coaches. But I think that should demonstrate, particularly in Florida's perspective, that it is possible to be successful to recruit on both a regional and national level and to win games. It isn't something that's out of the reach of a lot of SEC teams.
I agree with that.
I think even you look at Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas in the 80s and 90s and the Nolan Richardson, that was a top program. I mean, that was a top 20 program nationally every single year. And the fact that they've fallen on hard times, I don't think it's because it's gotten harder to recruit at Arkansas. I just think the guys that they've hired haven't been that good. So, anyway, so final thoughts on the SEC. Let's go ahead and give our pick for the champion, although I'm guessing everybody's picking Kentucky. Is anybody not picking Kentucky in this group?
I'm going to go with Kentucky.
Okay. Hank? It's okay, David.
I'm going to go Kentucky, but I would not be surprised to see two Final Four teams in this conference in Kentucky and Florida.
Interesting. And then as far as number of tournament teams, I'll go first on this. I think obviously Kentucky and Florida make the tournament. I think I think Tennessee ends up making the tournament. I think Missouri does not. But I do think you get one team out of a mix of Ole Miss, LSU, and Arkansas that ends up finding their way into the field. So I think Missouri ends up just struggling all year for a variety of reasons. But I like one of those teams, not more than one, but just one of those teams from that other group.
Yeah, and I believe the day practice started, Marshall Henderson's suspension ended. Coincidentally, beneficial.
Coincidentally, yes.
Yes.
David, you go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah, tournament teams. I think Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee are slam dunks. It would not surprise me if Alabama snuck in there. Now, again, they seem to be a little snake-bitten with injuries in the past. If they can stay healthy and pull it together, I could see them getting onto the bubble and even getting inside of it. Arkansas, you always feel like that they should be better than what they are. I was kind of expecting them to have a big year last year, and they didn't. I think they'll hold serve at home, but I just don't think that they're going to get the wins away from home that they need to get in. There isn't really anybody else that I like. I do think Auburn is terrible, and I just wanted to make sure I got that in.
Thank you for going out on a limb with that. We appreciate it. Okay, Hank, your tournament teams out of this conference?
I actually think we have to get to 68 somehow. I do think the SEC gets five this year. I do. I think that Kentucky, Florida will both be instant locks before the season. Tennessee will be in. I think Missouri will be in. And I also think Alabama's going to get it this year.
Well, that would be welcome news to Anthony Grant and the folks at Alabama. So we'll see what happens with that. But
That's on anybody's mind down there.
You're absolutely right. Well, that wraps up our preview of the SEC, and that wraps up our previews for today. We're glad that we had a chance to bring these to you. My thanks to David and to Hank for sticking with us throughout the course of the afternoon. We're going to be back with more at a future date. I'm not sure when yet, but we're going to be definitely pulling off or putting on, I guess would be a better way of putting it, previews of the ACC, the Big East, and the American Athletic Conference. That's our next group of three conferences.
It's going to be a fun one.
That'll be a good time. We'll get Lee Delvecchio back on to scream and rage incoherently.
It's going to be great.
It'll be awesome stuff. But that's coming up later on this week, so be sure to check back in with us here on Hoops HD. For David Griggs and for Hank Grassner, I am Galen Clavio. Catch you folks on the flip side. Be sure to check us out on hoopshd.com for podcasts, videocasts, and more coverage of college basketball. So long, everybody.